lack of confidence? Low self-esteem? Fears and phobias hold us back from enjoying and living the life we really want. Would you like to be more confident? Break the habits that are holding you back from achieving what you want in life or in business? Would you like to overcome a fear or phobia, lose weight, and say goodbye to yo-yo dieting? Do you want to stop smoking? Inspirational coach and hypnotherapist Steve Twynham can help you move in a positive direction. Known as the Happy Coach, Steve has helped thousands of people make a positive change to their lives. For more information, visit stevetwynham.com. Be happy. Be inspired. Live the life you really want.
Hi, this is Steve Twine, and welcome to Be Happy, Be Inspired. If you're joining us for the first time tonight, you're very, very welcome. If you're a regular listener, once again, thanks for making this program so popular. This program is all about helping people be happy, be inspired, and live the life you really want to live. Well, I recorded an interview with Tamara Taylor a couple of days ago. Now, Tamara is the captain of the England Women's Rugby Union team. And really, it's a story of desire, passion, and persistence. And that's coming up very shortly here on Be Happy, Be Inspired. But you know, in a world where we often look for instant results, the big fix, it's not really about the big fix. It's the small steps that we take over time that compound over time to make the big difference. Whether that's in relationships, whether it's in health, whatever it is, it's the small steps that make the big difference. And let me give you an example. Let's say, for example, that we were wanting to be healthier, me and a friend. Now, if I went out today and ate a healthy salad and that friend had a big, juicy burger, would we notice a difference by the end of day one? The answer is probably not. But what about if we did that for a week? Would we see a difference? Again, the answer is probably not. But if we did it for a month, we'd begin to see a difference. If we did it for 3 months, I'd suggest we see a really big difference. And if we carried on making that small change over time for, say, 12 months, I would suggest after 12 months, we'd be wildly different in our health. You see, so it's not about just taking that big step. It's about the small changes over time that compound to make the big difference. You may have seen an advert recently. I think it was for Honda cars, and they were looking to reduce the weight of the car. But they didn't do it by taking something big off the car. Their engineers worked on the small parts of that vehicle, all with the aim of reducing just a few grams. The result, they hit their target of reducing that weight of the car. Now, in sport, you've got a team of people, you know, and sometimes you're looking for the big change. But it's about that team working together, to look at making all those small changes that they can make in their own game to make that big difference, that can change the results, in the next game. So just think about the small changes you can make, the small changes that you can make over time that will make the big difference to the results. Okay, now it's now time for the conversation I had with Tamara Taylor. As I said earlier, a story of desire, passion, and persistence. Relax and enjoy this conversation with Tamara. So there you were in the World Cup, but how did it all start for you?
It's all my brother's fault, the playing rugby. He played at school and at club, and I was that typical younger sister that wanted to do what her older brother was doing. And a club started, a women's club started at his club. So I went along at 15 and a half years old, and I haven't really looked back from playing rugby since then.
Okay, so at 15 and a half, so it
pretty was, much, yeah.
Yeah, right. So the brother there was the influence, and you got involved. So you've actually got the bug early on then, shall we say.
Yeah, we lived overseas up until I was seven, and when we came back to England, I went to, it was a boys' school that was converting to be co-educational, and I only went there because we had to, and we'd moved in a bit of a rush, and long story with moving back and our house falling through, basically. So I ended up at this school that I wasn't meant to go to, and obviously they played a lot of boys' sports because it was a boys' school. I didn't do any, I wasn't allowed to play in any of the games as the only girl in my year, but I had rugby and football and cricket and, you know, the traditional, what you would have perceived to be male sports. I was thrust in amongst them in my PE lessons, and I think that had a major influence on me as well, because it was just the norm and everyone was playing these sports that perhaps other girls maybe hadn't seen as being sports that they would play, and I was just doing them because they were my PE lessons. So that I think that also made me realise that rugby was out there and I maybe wouldn't have known that before.
So how did it become, or when did you start sort of playing at a competitive level then? Because if you couldn't play in the games lessons, did you join a club somewhere, and how did that?
Yeah, when I was 16, so I did PE lessons, and we played touch rugby, which is just a non-contact form of the game. So if the boys played competitively against other schools, they played contact, but in lessons I did the skills sort of side of rugby. And then when I was just after I was 15, a women's team started at a club in the local town. So that's when I started playing competitive rugby, but not until I was 16, because there was an age limit on playing adult rugby at the time, was you had to be 16. So I trained for a year, and then when I turned 16, I played my first game.
Wow. And I guess in those days, women's rugby was quite... Was it new?
It had been around for quite a while, but yeah, relatively speaking, it wasn't really a majority sport for females to be playing.
So you're there, you were, you joined the club and you're enjoying your rugby and developing. So how did the call up to England happen then? How did that come about?
There's pathways in whichever sport you do if you want to go on to try and get to an elite level. And in rugby, it's county first. So you'd play for your club and then you get selected for your county. And from that, you'd then go on to a regional or an area. And I sort of went along that pathway. And when I was 17 years old, I got seen within those county games and invited into the England students, which was the same as what it is with the boys at the minute. So you're either at school or at university age group, and I represented them for a season, and then from that I got into the development academy and I went along to training camps, and then England A, which is the equivalent of sort of the second team, and then in 2005 I got my first full cap for England. Yeah, so it was a long journey and lots of sort of progressions along the way,
I think that's a very important point, because people say, look at successful people and think it's been an instant result, so to speak, and they don't appreciate the journey that people take to get there, and it's wonderful that you've just sort of really communicated that to people, to say, yeah, there were stepping stones along the way that I had to get there to achieve the goal. Was it always your goal to play for England then? Or
not really. I just really enjoyed playing rugby. It was something that I wanted to do because, you know, as I said, my brother was playing it, and I thought it was just a really different sport that I didn't think many girls had a chance to do at the time. And I was lucky that I'd seen it and my brother played it and I had an opportunity to play it at a club. And that sort of took me on that pathway, and I started playing, and then I thought, actually, I really quite like this, and then I got selected, and then it was only sort of once I got into the county kind of setup that I realised that there was something bigger out there, and that maybe if I kept working hard and I listened to what my coaches were saying and I took on that advice, then actually maybe I could get somewhere. But I think, I don't know, I was never one of those people that I knew it was there and that was what I was striving for. But once I got there, I've been striving for that World Cup win for quite a few years now. So
there's a passion there. There was a love for what you're doing. How did it feel when you won your first cap then?
I was terrified, to be perfectly honest.
Terrified before the games, the nerves in the tunnel then, was it?
Yeah, it was... It was in New Zealand, who at the time were world champions. So I'd gone on my first full England tour, and I hadn't played in the first test match against them, and we got beaten quite comprehensively. And I'd played in the sort of midweek game, so it wasn't capped, it was just sort of a friendly. And that had been very, very hard. We'd won, but it was, it was a very, very competitive game. And then I was on the bench for the final test match. So I think it's always difficult being on the bench and waiting on the sideline, not quite knowing when you're going to go on, and seeing the game unfold in front of you and not being able to influence it. And we were losing at the time, obviously, when I came on. So there's that added pressure of, right, I've got to make sure that I make a really good impact. And this is the first time, and I'm playing against the world champions, and I'm in the middle of New Zealand, which is, for people that don't know, it's literally a country that lives and breathes the sport. So it was sort of almost like going to the home of rugby and playing rugby in their backyard. So it was an amazing experience, but I was very nervous.
So I would suggest you did pretty well then.
Yeah, well, we didn't win that game, but we closed the deficit. And I think really from then onwards, we closed the gap on New Zealand year on year, really, until finally last year. We didn't play them in the World Cup because they were actually knocked out before we had a chance to play them. But we finally took the mantle of World Champions, which they've had for a good few years now.
Oh, and that must have been an absolutely exhilarating moment for all of you, I guess.
Very mixed emotions, because it was my third World Cup final. So I'd had that defeat to New Zealand twice already. So to get to the final again, for it to not be against New Zealand, was obviously a very good mental point for us that it wasn't, you know, potentially deja vu. And relief. There was a massive amount of relief that, you know, we hadn't thrown it away, that we performed. And it was only after that sort of relief settled down that I allowed myself to realise sort of what we'd achieved.
To enjoy the moment. So again, once again, yeah. You know, two incidences where you'd not won the World Cup final, but you finally got there. And so tell us, what are you doing now then?
So I work for the national governing body. I'm a rugby coach. Up in South Durham. So I work rugby and I play rugby, so I combine my training with working full time within rugby. So rugby is pretty much my life.
So you're living
and breathing it. Yeah. The next international competition is the Six Nations. So we finished the World Cup in August, and we've had a break from international competition. We've just been playing club rugby. And then next weekend, actually, not this one coming up, the one after will be England against Wales in the first Six Nations game.
Wow. So you're looking forward to that?
Yeah, massively. I think the Six Nations is a really exciting competition, because it's a tournament, but it's run, you know, almost every week for an 8-week period. And if you're not in camp because there's a game, you're in camp training and you're in and out of work in between. And yeah, it's just very exciting. It's hard work, very hard work for the sort of 8-week period. But it's really nice that it goes on for so long and you're in that kind of international environment for an 8-week period. You sort of touched on it before. You look at an athlete and you see them, you know, win a World Cup or win an Olympic medal, and you just see that pinnacle of what they've done. And, you know, you don't see... Probably one of my main points of my life that was challenging was having my ACL reconstruction in my knee, which took me out of the game for 9 months. And that was a year out from the previous World Cup. And that kind of an injury that takes you out of something that you've done day in, day out. You know, I couldn't run for 4 months, and you take for granted that if you're late for the bus, you'll just run for the bus. So I kind of want to be able to share things like that. It's been a really difficult journey and had to overcome this and that, but actually you can, and it'll take time and it'll take hard work, but if you keep going, you'll get there.
I think that's absolutely wonderful, and to share that is absolutely great stuff. And Tamara, thanks for joining us today. It's been wonderful to talk to you. And if it's okay for you here on Vail, could we actually just monitor your progress?
Yeah, definitely.
And if we, you know, if we have time within that tournament, if we could catch up, just have a quick chat, see how things are going?
Yeah, that would be fantastic.
That'd be awesome. Wonderful. Well, look, have a wonderful day. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. All right, thanks very much. Take care.
Bye-bye now. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hi, this is Steve. Hope you can join me this coming Sunday for Inspired 4 till 6 on Vail Radio. Great music to get your week off to a great start. And do me a great big favour. Just tell a friend. Just spread the news. Hope you can join me this Sunday, 4 till 6 on Vail Radio.